You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Welcome back to 32 Fans. I'm Alex Chester. With me, as always, is Wheels Wienerker, and returning for the second week in a row, Jared Jerome. Jared, welcome back to 32 Fans.
Thanks, guys. Thanks. He's looking forward.
Still alive. Much like UConn, even though Akiva dropped off halfway through that podcast last week. Akiva, are you going to be here all day today?
Not sure. I had some Zencaster issues with what we record through last week. It's possible. Also, I don't know who's in the Sweet 16 because I obviously didn't listen to the rest of the podcast after I left, so you're going to have to tell me what the matchups are.
All right, no problem. Before we get into that, by the way, so we had a lot of listeners complaining to me about the short shrift we gave some of their alma maters and favorite teams who got eliminated early. Mm-hmm. So the Sweet 16 are all teams that I have ranked in my top 23 in my cumulative ranking of every school's best NBA squad. So mm-hmm. I thought we'd just quickly run through the best seven teams that were eliminated, just to acknowledge who's not here, and then we'll quickly look at the bracket.
And that's not going to appease the people who are complaining, because they were complaining about terrible teams. But
yeah. The reason I wanted to start this is because the number 22 team in my power rankings didn't even make the tournament. That's Auburn. Auburn's only had 22 alums, but Charles Barkley is one of them. And along with Chuck Person. Have I mentioned on this podcast the poem I wrote about Chuck Person in third grade?
I don't think so.
Oh. So Chuck Person. It was bad times for the Timberwolves when he was like him and Michael Williams got traded from the Pacers, and they were like the Wolves' best players, maybe even first grade. So I wrote a poem all about Chuck Person.
Michael Williams was the guy who had the record for most consecutive free throws, right? It was
correct. Like 93, and he also spelled his name EA instead of AE.
All right.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so Auburn, number 22, did not make this tournament. Number 20, Minnesota, lost to LSU in the second round. That was the team led by Kevin McHale and others. Number 18, Wake Forest, also lost to LSU. Shaq and Bob Pettit and Pete Maravich and company. Wake Forest has Tim Duncan and Chris Paul, so very, very solid, at least top two stars. Number 16, DePaul, with George Mikan and Rod Strickland, Mark Aguirre, Terry Cummings. They lost to UCLA. Number 15, Arizona, lost in an upset to Marquette. Arizona, obviously, point guard U. They have Mike Bibby, Gilbert Arenas, Damon Stoudemire, Jason Terry. Not as good up front, where they're relying on Channing Frye and Bison Daly. Number 14, USC, lost in another upset to Syracuse. USC.
Bison Daly.
Yeah, USC is DeMar DeRozan, Gus Williams, Paul Westfall, Bill Sharman, the other Cliff Robinson, Nick Vucevic. Number 12, Houston, lost. Jared Jerome, very upset about this. They lost to Duke. Houston, of course, has in Akeem, Elvin Hayes, and Clyde Drexler, a top three as good as anyone else's, but drops off very quickly after that. The top guys on their bench are like Bo Outlaw and
Well,
Dwight
number
Jones.
Number 12 shows that they have a leg to stand on. It's a good team.
Yeah. Yes. So those are the teams that are out. So let's talk about the teams that are in. Let's take a look at our bracket. We have Kentucky against Ohio State and Marquette against Georgia Tech in the upper left. In the lower left, we have Duke against Michigan State, Syracuse against Kansas. In the upper right, we have UCLA against Georgetown and Michigan against UConn. And then our final two matchups in the Sweet 16 are going to be UNC against LSU and St. John's against Indiana.
I think this time,
Keith, you're all caught up.
I think this time it's going to be a lot. Nobody complained to me or anything like that, but I feel like last time it could have been a little confusing for the listeners. You have all these names and all these teams thrown out. Some of them don't even have that many good players and everything. I feel like this is much more confined. We know the teams a little better now. We've been over them. We're going to go over them again a couple of times. They're better matchups now. So I feel like this is a better listening experience. So hopefully this one will be really good. I expect it to be.
Yeah, we only have the good teams left. So right. Let's jump right in here. First matchup in the Sweet 16, we have Kentucky against Ohio State. On the bracket, this is a 1 seed against a 4 seed. To me, these are two of the top maybe 6 or 7 teams in this whole tournament. Kentucky has just a plethora of young bigs, Anthony Davis, DeMarcus Cousins, Carl Anthony Towns. So those guys are rotating in and out alongside the Hall of Famer Dan Issel, who was great on the Kentucky Colonels and later the Denver Nuggets. Cliff Hagan, another Hall of Famer at small forward. And in the backcourt, a bunch of other active guys. They have John Wall and Rajon Rondo with a couple of another ABA Hall of Famer, Louis Dampier, on the bench, along with Frank Ramsey from back in the day, from like the 50s, on the bench as well. So Kentucky's got a lot of active guys, but they have a couple of ABA stars and then a couple of guys from even before that.
Jamal
as well,
Mashburn.
And Hagan and Ramsey. Yeah, Jamal Key Mashburn player. On the end of the bench, Tayshaun Prince. Yeah. Ohio State has an interesting squad. They have 4 Hall of Famers as well. Each team has 4 Hall of Famers. Neil Johnston, the center from the 50s. Jerry Lucas, who at the end of his career was on the Knicks, but is a guy who averaged 17 and 15 for his career, which I think there's only 4 guys who ever did that. And John Havlicek is their best player, their highest profile player, starting small forward. Their backcourt, a little bit weaker. Michael Redd, who had a good career but a short career for the Bucks in the last decade. Mike Conley, the point guard for the Grizzlies, for some reason they did not trade him at the All-Star break at the trade deadline, and he has never made an All-Star team but is a very good player. They have another very, very old school Hall of Fame center coming off the bench in Arne Rizin, and then after that their bench gets a little bit weaker. It's Jim Jackson, Herb Williams, Clark Kellogg, who had a very great college player, very, very short NBA career, put up great numbers but only played like 3 or 4 seasons. D'Angelo Russell will make this team in a couple of years as well. So, Keith, what's your take on Kentucky versus Ohio State?
I'm a Kentucky guy. I think part of their value is also hurt because these guys are all growing up in value more than any other teams, obviously, because they're just the entire NBA is littered with Kentucky guys. And being an active player for some weird reason hurts you in the Chester Fantasy League.
No, it doesn't hurt you. It's just I can't. Devin Booker's only played 3 seasons in the NBA. Like, he's got to put together a decent
career. Let's pretend he played 9. Let's pretend Anthony Davis has been in the league for a decade.
And let's pretend that Michael Jordan was 4 inches taller. And let's pretend, what do you mean pretend? Let's pretend Shaq could hit free throws. No, we're dealing with the real world. We're judging these guys based on what they've actually done.
Well, Keeves are
also you're talking about guys like AD who've never been bad. You know what I mean? Like, there's nothing.
And also,
yeah, but hold on. Let's talk about Clark Kellogg. No, hold on. Let's talk about Clark Kellogg on Ohio State. He's the last guy on the Ohio State bench. He averaged 19 points, 10 rebounds a game for his career.
Right.
Those are monster numbers. Those are Hall of Fame numbers. Why is he not in the Hall of Fame? Why have 98% of our listeners never heard of him? Yeah, exactly. Exactly the same. He's in the same boat as Carl Anthony Towns. In fact, he's played about as many games as Carl Anthony Towns, and his numbers are fairly similar.
Here's the so that's true, but he's not exactly the same as Carl Anthony Towns. Carl Anthony Towns is probably not retiring now, so he's you can do some projection. But the other part, I think the main part of Keith's argument, he correctly.
Oh, by the way,
wrong.
I hope Carl Anthony Towns retires.
Well, he's finally injured. I mean, he has like an Iron Man streak going. He finally is missing some games. But anyway, I think the crux of your argument, Keith, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, is that this is a one game scenario. So you're taking the best of a player. That's the debate. How much of it is taking their full career and how much of it is taking them in a given day at their best? You take Anthony Davis at his best. He's one of the greatest players in NBA history, right? He hasn't accomplished that yet for a career, but for a one game sample, you can argue he's one of the great players. So I guess that's kind of your point with the Kentucky guys, right? So you have a bunch of guys who are like great players for short periods. They're not on the Chester rankings. They're not in the top 50. Because they've only played 3, 4, 5, 6 years. But if they played 15 years, they would be. And that means they're not as great. They did not have as great a career as the long-term guy, but it does not mean they would not be as good in one game, which is what this is. So it all comes down to how much you weigh those two factors. I guess that's sort of the bottom line.
Yes.
Yeah. And anyways, I don't disagree that Kentucky is going to win this game over Ohio State anyways. Even though both teams are surprisingly a little bit weak in the backcourt, I think. Like, for Rajon Rondo and John Wall to be the best guards on Kentucky, and then, they only have one guard on their bench right now, Frank Ramsey, who, is in the Hall of Fame, but, retired in 1960 or whatever. Mm-hmm. But again, 10 years down the line, Eric Bledsoe, Devin Booker, Brandon Knight, Jamal Murray, De'Aaron Fox, some of those guys might be on this team as well. So, all right, so Kentucky advances there.
I just want to say, I actually picked Ohio State. I know it doesn't matter because you guys both picked Kentucky, because to me that team fits so much better than Kentucky. Kentucky has 3 big guys, Cat, Cousins, Anthony Davis and throw in Dan Issel, who you can't play together. So it doesn't matter how many big guys you have. You can't play five big guys or you'll lose. And then they have they don't really have wings. And then they have two point guards who are pass-first, non-shoot point guards in John Wall and Rajon Rondo. It's not a team that fits
well. Hold on.
Well
John Wall is pass-first, not shoot?
Yeah, you're a little bit
he
hard.
He scores 20
you're
points
a
game.
Hard on John
he
Wall.
Shoots,
I will say they have two guys
shooter.
Who never won
Rajon
anything
Rondo
in their
can't
life.
Shoot. What? What?
Yeah.
No, so I'm saying you admit John Wall and Rajon Rondo, neither of them is an off guard. Agreed?
Yeah, but Ohio, I mean, who's Ohio State's shooter? Does
I mean,
John Havlicek
know
how to hit a 25 footer? I doubt it.
Well, I'm sure he would if he played now, and we're doing it, and as you said, we're doing. Okay, so let's look at Ohio State. You have Mike.
The problem is they have Wall, who's never won anything, Antoine Walker. Like, these guys are like, you know, the counteract.
Let's look at Ohio State for a second, okay? So you their front court is unassailable. They're old guys, but they're.
Wait, hold on. No, they are assailable because you're going to get 28 minutes from Neil Johnston, and you're going to get 30 minutes from Jerry Lucas, right? And then who's going to play the other 40 minutes?
This is a one-and-done playoff game. Why are they playing? Why is the superstar playing 28 minutes?
Again, this entire tournament happens in one. This entire tournament happens in one day. You're playing six games in one day.
No,
you need the depth.
That's not actually
so.
True.
Oh, it's over 2 days. That's true. No. We said this last week. We wanted to do the whole thing in one day. Unfortunately, it took us two. So the first two rounds we did last week, and the last four rounds we're doing today. It's all happening on March 11th, 2019. So Kentucky has Davis and Cousins and Towns. Like, Kentucky's depth, the fact that they have all these guys that are the same is a strength because it means for 48 minutes you're going against a superstar big. And Ohio State just can't handle that. So Arnie Risen and Herb Williams off the bench are their, like, only bigs.
Kentucky's a better roster. I just want to point one thing out about Ohio State. To me, it fits perfectly. You have Neil Johnston, a classic center. You have Jerry Lucas, as you said, one of four guys to average basically 16-16 for his career, 17-16 for his career. Prototypical power forward, who, by the way, actually did shoot threes, even though there were no threes. And that was what he was famous for that 73 Knicks team. Who'd stand, they said, like, this is what I've heard, like, 25 feet away. Anyway, whatever. He was a kind of like perfect stretch four kind of guy who rebounded his butt off. John Havlicek is an all-time great. Yes, he's overrated by Bill Simmons, but he's still an all-time great. And then the weak spot, the point guard and shooting guard, fit perfectly. Mike Conley is your prototypical pass first, get into the lane, defensive point guard. And Michael Redd is a pure shooter at, you know, a 6'6 pure shooting guard.
Yeah, but neither of those guys are close to making the Hall of Fame. And in fact, you know, never even made an All-Star game in the case of Conley. And the teams at this point are mostly littered with Hall of Famers.
Again, I agree. Kentucky's a better squad.
Either way, look,
but
these teams.
I love the balance and the perfect, you know, the way that they fit together of Ohio State, but whatever. It is what it is.
All right, Kentucky. So these teams are both better than the other matchup in this region. So, you know, the winner, Kentucky, almost for sure going to the Final Four. We have Marquette against Georgia Tech. So Marquette pulled off the upset of Arizona. As a reminder, Marquette's swingmen are Jimmy Butler and Dwayne Wade. That's the strength of this team, along with Maurice Lucas, who was the second best player on those Blazers in the late 70s. They have a solid point guard in Doc Rivers, and, you know, that's Marquette. Georgia Tech, a little bit better, I think, overall. Like Arizona, the team that Marquette just upset, tons of point guards. Stephon Marbury, Mark Price, Kenny Anderson, Jarrett Jack. So a lot of point guards there. Marbury can definitely put the ball in the basket, and Mark Price, you know, more of a classic, you know, pass-first point guard. Yeah, but they also have up front, I think they have Chris Bosh is, you know, better than anyone on Marquette's front line, and Derek Favors and Thaddeus Young, a couple of active guys. Who, you know, Derek Favors never became what we thought, but a couple of solid guys up front. So this is a fairly close matchup. The best player, Dwayne Wade, is on Marquette, but I feel like the second, third, fourth, fifth best players are all on Georgia Tech. I'm taking Georgia Tech. What about you, Keith?
I mean, this is a rough one because obviously you're not going to be blown away by this Georgia Tech team, right? I don't know. Like, I think Butler and Wade, well, you said second, third, fourth, and fifth, but I feel like. Are you really – who is so much better than Jimmy Butler on the Georgia Tech team?
Yeah, and Maurice Lucas.
Well, Jimmy Butler's – again, but Jimmy Butler has played 500 games in his career and averages 16-5. Like, he's had, like, two all-star caliber seasons, and it looks like he's already past his prime.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Stephon Marbury played 350 more games and was better across the board. He was an asshole, and although so was Jimmy Butler, apparently. So,
But Dwayne Wade – over his career, you know, I mean, Dwayne Wade, one of the really stupid things about your list is that if somebody stays on and helps and is willing to accept a role spot as a role player for the last few years of their career, it hurts you
I'm exactly the opposite. That's what you say. We're complete opposites. That's what you say. You want a guy who plays 3 years, three All-Star years, and never plays again. I value a guy over the length of his career.
No, why? Because you're only adding win shares, and you don't care about like his PR going down and his points per game going down?
No, I look at everything. I look at the number of games played, the win shares. I look at the cumulative numbers and the rate numbers.
Steve, you're totally going opposite on the argument you always make against him. You say that he always favors the long-term.
No, I'm saying that he – because Chester keeps saying, well, he averaged 16-6 for his career about people. Well, Wade's numbers went down from 26 to 22.
No. You're not – no, I said Jimmy Butler has barely played and still has bad numbers.
No, I'm talking about the 100 other guys you're talking about. Anyway –
I have not mentioned poor numbers for guys who played long careers. I've only mentioned the strong numbers. For example, when we talked about UConn, I mentioned how Clifford Robinson played forever and still had better numbers than guys who played half his career. I've never done that. My point about Jimmy Butler is that Jimmy Butler, because he's good right now, we think of him as some all-time great. He's a guy whose career is probably on the way down and, you know, Jimmy Butler's never going to come close to the Hall of Fame.
I think that's a good point on Butler because he's an all-star type player now. He's a guy who's always in talks of, the big trade with Jimmy Butler and everything like that. You're right. I mean, we do think of him as being greater than some guy from the 60s who we don't really know about who's probably...
Or even the 90s. Mark Price's NBA career was much better than Jimmy Butler's. Now, Butler could pass him in a couple of years, but is it going to happen? I don't know.
Yeah, it's a good point.
We didn't appreciate Mark Price when we had him. Anyway, I have Marquette winning this game. Dwayne Wade, for a one-game playoff, I think Dwayne Wade can, withstand this team. Jimmy Butler shuts down Marbury if he needs to. Jimmy Butler could shut down Bosch if he needed to, probably. Thad Young and Bosch favors and Young is not a great offensive line. It's an interesting this team would rebound like crazy.
Bosch is by far the best offensive big in either team. So
yeah, I think Dennis Scott is really an underrated guy in Georgia Tech's bench. Really would have been a perfect player for this era. He would have shot 14 threes a game, Dennis Scott.
And you guys are also downgrading Maurice Lucas. You're talking about
I agree.
Games.
That's why. Well, I'm not downgrading. I have Marquette winning. It's up to you, Jared, because I have Marquette winning, and I think Chester does not.
So this was really tough for me. I hear both sides of the argument. At the end of the day, I'm looking more of like style of game, like I keep saying. And to me, this Georgia Tech team can spread out the Marquette team. And so Chester pointed out that Mark Price was more of a prototypical point guard than Steph Marbury. I actually think the opposite. Marbury gets kind of the rough end of the stick because people say, he wasn't a winner and blah, blah. Marbury actually averaged a lot of assists. For a long time going, he was one of only two players to average 20 points and 8 assists a game, along with Oscar Robertson. Russell Westbrook is there now also. Again, a guy who shoots a lot and everything like that, but it doesn't mean they don't pass. So anyway, Stephon Marbury, I think, was – Mark Price was a point guard too, but he was a great shooter. So if you need Mark Price off the ball with Stephon Marbury handling it, I mean, Mark Price was third all-time in free throw percentage. He's probably top 20 all-time in three-point percent. Like, Mark Price is a top 10, top 15 all-time shooter. He was short. But you can play him off the ball, spread it out with him and Marbury. Thad Young also could step out, athletic guy who's not as big, but can also play down low and rebound. And then Kenny Anderson, another excellent point guard. Dennis Scott, obviously D3 was his nickname, a great three-point shooter. To me, and Chris Bosh, a big guy who could rebound and post, but also could step out and shoot threes and would have shot a lot of threes if that was.
Yeah, Bosh would shoot a lot of threes if he had stayed.
So I think this is kind of like a D'Antoni small ball team that will spread Marquette out. And while Marquette has definitely the best player, I think the matchup favors Georgia Tech in this run-and-gun type system. So I'm giving it to Georgia Tech.
All right, yeah, and by the way, Stephon Marbury, you look at his numbers like 50 years from now, people are not going to understand how he's not on the Hall of Fame because his numbers are incredible.
And he was very talented. Story about him. There's a reason. He was a very talented player.
Well, Chester, can I make a suggestion?
Yeah.
I think right after the Sweet 16, because you just explained the rosters, I think it's easier to just go straight to the Elite Eight and then finish that region.
Okay, fine. All right, so we have Kentucky against Georgia Tech. I don't even think there's anything to say here.
That's why I'm saying also, because there's nothing to talk about. So I think it's easy to just put Kentucky into the Final Four.
Yeah.
Cut down those nets, Wildcats.
Yeah, you're going to the Final Four. Congratulations.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, all right, so we've done that. Kentucky in the Final Four, the one seed, holds true in their region. Let's see who they're going to face. We have Duke against Michigan State. This is a phenomenal, phenomenal matchup. I'm not going to say which is which, but I have one of these teams the seventh best team overall, in my opinion, and one of these teams the eighth best team. So these teams are neck and neck. I could see it going either way. Just to review their lineups, we'll start with the one seed Duke.
They have up front, they have Carlos Boozer and Elton Brand, a couple of pretty similar guys. They have Grant Hill, who, you know, at his apex in the late 90s was, you know, second only to Scottie Pippen, you know, was the sort of the best all-around, you know, swingman in the game. Point guard Kyrie Irving only showed up at Duke for 8 games, but, you know, great scorer. Jeff Mullins, another great scorer at shooting guard. And on the bench, they have a little bit of everything except guards. They have a lot of bigs. Corey Maggette, Christian Laettner, Jack Maron, Mike Kaminsky, Luol Deng. But the only guard on their bench is J.J. Redick, who can come in and shoot some threes. And, you know, the next best active guy who's about to make this team in a couple of years is Jason Tatum, another sort of, you know, bigger, you know, a three leaning on to stretch four. So Duke a little weak at the guard other than Mullins and Kyrie. So they need those guys
and
to play.
And Dunleavy is a tall guy, but he could shoot. That's a guy who could come off the bench and shoot for them.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah. Michigan State has, you know, obviously far and away the best player in this game, Magic Johnson. They also have a great shooter at shooting guard, Steve Smith. But and they have a couple of bigs who are, I think, can bang pretty similar to Boozer and Brand and Kevin Willis and Zebo Zach Randolph.
Maybe
problem
better.
Is,
I mean, well, Randolph arguably was a better player that, you know, had a better career than Boozer or Brand.
Elton Brand, I think, is very underrated and forgotten. It's actually interesting you say that because
I like Elton Brand, but I also think that, you know, like Zach Randolph, we're going to look back and be like, oh yeah, he was a baller. Like I feel
it's
like he would have, if you had asked if they had, if their primes had lined up, which they almost did.
Yeah,
I think GMs would have taken Randolph over either of those guys. Like every GM, if you could have tolerated his off the court mentality, but that won't grade on you in this 2-day tournament. He can only get in your
nerves
so much.
And also, he fixed that in the latter half of his career. It's funny, I alluded.
Yeah,
to,
no, I mean.
Yeah, I was saying, yeah, I alluded to this.
He became a mensch.
Right, and I alluded to this with Brand last week, that he has, like, these eerily consistent numbers. Like, if you go down, and Chester's right, I think he is underrated. Like, these are literally his numbers from his rookie year up till whenever I stop. 20.1 rebound, points and rebounds. 20.1, 10.0. 20.1, 10.1. 18.2, 11.6. 18.5, 11.3. 20.0, 10.3. 20.0, 9.5. 24.7, 10.0. 20.5.
Wait, who are you talking about?
That's Elton Brand. He's basically exactly.
Oh, yeah. I thought you were talking about Zebo, and I was going to say Elton Brand was the most consistent guy in the universe.
Well, that's – no, I alluded to this last podcast that, like, Elton Brand has this weird, like, exact same numbers every year kind of thing going, and this is what it was. This is what it is exactly.
Well, Brand's interesting also in that he was such a great college player, and a lot of the Duke guys do have this, that it's like he could never have lived up to his potential.
Right.
Well, but
one,
his
so
also problem in the NBA was he was a great power forward playing in the Western Conference at the same time as Tim Duncan, Kevin Garnett, Chris Webber, Dirk Nowitzki. Like, he had no chance to stand out because
yeah.
there were
and now,
so
and
like,
every the, guy we sort of mentioned this last week, but every guy on this list, even in Grant Hill, was never other than let's not count Kyrie, who didn't really have a college career. Every single guy on this list was better in college than the pros. I guess Dunleavy kind
well,
of maybe had
but
a
Grant,
better
Grant Hill was a top five player in Detroit in the late 90s.
Sure, but Grant Hill was an immortal college player for like two different eras of Duke because he was the young guy on the original team.
One more thing on Elton Brand, he was also an excellent shot blocker. That's the thing people forget about him. He was only like, he wasn't that tall. He was like 6'8".
Well, Brand was bigger
long,
than Boozer. Boozer, I think, was like really like 6'7" and a half, if I remember. Boozer
was
not
six.
As big.
He's like 6'9", Boozer. But Elton Brand was very long. Elton Brand was long.
And also, and
he
like
was a shot blocker. Better defender defender than Zebo. And
I mean, we're talking about this, and it's interesting. I think Willis and Randolph, not a huge difference. Plus, Michigan State has Draymond, who like, could do a lot of things that none
that's
of the four
key.
Guys we mentioned do
that's
and like arguably is better. But at
well,
the end of the
but,
day,
I mean,
like,
Draymond's
Magic
career
Johnson,
is like, you know. Yeah.
Chester, Magic Johnson is so much better than Kyrie. And the difference between Steve Smith and Jason Richardson, obviously not as good as Jeff Mullins and Grant Hill because of Grant Hill. But like, one team has Magic Johnson. To me, Michigan
but,
State
but,
wins
but if
game
you're
by
talking
12-4.
If you're talking about judging guys at their peak, Grant Hill at his peak was, you know, an inner circle Hall of Famer in the late 90s.
I agree. But we're not judging it at their peak. We're sort of
we're hedging.
I don't
we're
know
hedging.
If I would judge it as like the peak of their seven best seasons.
Right.
I don't know
right.
if I would judge right. it as like the sum of their career. You know,
I
maybe throwing out.
I think that's a good way to look at it because we can't quite decide if we're doing career or at their peak. So let's do like a Jaws thing. You know what I mean?
Where, well, okay. Yeah, so here's
but
my
it doesn't
thing
matter
here.
Because Grant Hill is not Magic Johnson, and Grant Hill plus Kyrie doesn't even equal Magic Johnson plus Steve Smith.
Well, I would rather have Grant Hill and Kyrie than Magic Johnson and Jason Richardson. I think that's. But hold on.
I'm not
but,
sure.
But
Well, but even if
the
you're
way to
say,
win championships and to win games in the NBA is just to have like an immortal player. And yeah. as much as I love Kyrie, he's not immortal, and obviously Magic is.
Yeah. So here's my thing. I hate Duke.
I have Michigan State winning this game by 12. I don't just have them winning. Okay. I have them winning by double digits.
I hate Duke. I'm a Big Ten guy. I have
yeah,
Michigan
I hate
State
Duke too. But I know Michigan State's my. No offense, we have some very nice Michigan State listeners, but they're my least favorite team. So it gives me no pleasure, but I have them winning by 12.
I have Michigan State as my 7th best team overall. Duke is my 8th best team overall. So Michigan State I have as the slight favorite here. I have Duke pulling off the upset. And the reason is, again, this is a tournament. You're playing the whole thing in one day. You need to have a bench. There's value in having had a lot of good NBA players at your college, not just two or three guys. And you look at the bench for Michigan State, and if you're looking at the chart of the rosters, the easiest way, look at the win share totals for the guys on Michigan State, like from 8 through 12 on their bench. It's in the 20s and 30s. Like, these are guys who are like marginal NBA players, whereas everybody on the Duke team is in the 50s and 60s, which is like
approaching. Yeah, but for one game, it doesn't matter. Best of seven, I think Duke wins. But one game, Michigan State wins by double digits.
So I have Duke pulling
Magic
off
plays
a very,
44 minutes in this game.
All right, I have Duke pulling off
Scott
of
Skiles.
And plays center and does a sky hook to win it.
Mm-hmm. All right. So I have Duke pulling off a very mild upset here. Jared, what about you?
So I'm going to be
Yeah, I think Michigan State, by the way, well, no, the Vegas in this fake tournament loves Duke. So I think Duke is the favorite. So I don't think it's an upset.
Yeah, yeah.
It's I don't think a one-seeded Duke could ever be
and
the underdog.
And the
But Duke's reputation has always been that they don't make great NBA players, right? They only make good college players. And this is an NBA tournament.
I know, but the public still loves Duke. They're a public fake team.
Yeah, okay.
For this fake tournament.
All right, Jared, who do you have
winning? So to me, this is actually very similar to the Kentucky-Ohio State matchup. A one seed versus either a four or five seed, whatever it is, happens to be versus two Big Ten teams, where the one seed is deeper, has more talent, is a better overall squad, and if they're playing an 82-game season, would have a better record. If they're playing a 7-game series, would probably win. But in a one-game tournament, I like the team that fits the best. I would put Draymond into the starting lineup instead of Jason Richardson, which is ridiculous because I understand Richardson's played 300 more games with Draymond.
Yeah, Draymond could guard a three just fine.
Draymond could do everything. That's the whole. I mean, I don't even like Draymond.
I mean, have you watched a Warriors game this year? Draymond's a worse shooter than Threeniker. Draymond has become like a borderline.
Draymond could
useless
take Jeff
NBA
Mullins
player.
In this game, Chester, and he'd be fine. He would eat Jeff Mullins.
Yeah.
Here's my starting line for Michigan State. You have Magic. At point, don't need to say much about that. Steve Smith at shooting guard, great shooter, also a big backcourt, 6'9 and 6'8 backcourt, both doing exactly what they need to do. You have Draymond as the jack of all trades at the three, right? Who can guard the center or the point guard on Duke or any guy on Duke. He can guard literally any guy on Duke, right? Boozer he can guard, and he can guard. Who's their point guard? Kyrie.
Yeah, but hold on. But the problem with your team is they have no spacing
now.
On offense because Magic can't shoot. And Draymond can't shoot except for one season.
Steve Smith.
Yeah. So basically, you're playing four bigs and Steve Smith.
That's the weakness. That's the weakness. And then
they don't have a guy off the bench who could really come in. I guess Jay Vincent, was he a good shooter? I don't really know Jay Vincent so well.
Well, Mo Pete
was okay.
Mo Pete.
He was really more of a drive guy.
Mo Pete was a terrific shooter. No, he was a 3-point specialist, Mo Pete. Eric Snow was a
good
shooter. Mo Pete wouldn't make the Duke 13.
Yeah, Mo Pete doesn't make Duke, as Chester said.
Well, didn't you pick Michigan State?
He's already like not as good as Jason Tatum.
All right, we got to move on here. So who are you picking?
Michigan State. Michigan State.
All right, Michigan
State. Sorry, Chester.
All right, that's the first time I think that.
And what's the next
matchup?
Kansas-Syracuse.
Kansas-Syracuse. Yeah, this one is not gonna go very long. Syracuse, the weakest.
No,
team
let's
in
just
this
say
tournament.
Yes. Yeah. Let's just say Kansas wins, and let's go straight to Kansas, Michigan State.
Yeah. Yeah. They got Will Chamberlain. Enough said.
That's good.
So yeah. So Syracuse had a nice little upset there. Carmelo Anthony won something for once in his career in the NBA. So congratulations there. All right. So let's get to Michigan State against Kansas. This is another close matchup, I think. We just discussed Michigan State. Let's talk about Kansas lineup. So Kansas, starting at the five, is Will Chamberlain, who, according to Jared, could jump 17 feet and had sex with 700,000 women.
Tell me when I'm allowed to do my Will Chamberlain segment. I'm not joking. It's all facts.
No, no, no.
It's all figures.
No, no, not, no. It's not happening on this podcast.
I'm doing a Will Chamberlain segment.
We're going so slow.
Anyway, the point is, the point is that Will Chamberlain, obviously the dominant figure in this matchup. Now, the problem with Kansas
is a little bit similar to the problem with Duke, the team that Michigan State just ran past, is their guards are a little bit weak. They're starting JoJo White at the point, who's only in the Hall of Fame because he played on the Celtics. Paul Pierce has to slide down to shooting guard because they really don't have a lot of guards. The best guards on their bench, in fact, the only guards on their bench, are Kirk Heinrich and then Darnell Valentine, who I've never heard of, is the last guy on this bench. And even if you look at the guys up and coming, the guys on the waiting list, it's the Morris twins, it's Andrew Wiggins, it's Josh Jackson, you know, some swing guys there, but no classic guards. So Kansas is lacking a little bit in guards. It's going to be a problem with Magic Johnson on the other side. But, you know, the bottom line is it's Wilt Chamberlain and, you know, Paul Pierce also, you know, the third best player in this game after Magic Johnson and Wilt Chamberlain. But to me, it's Wilt Chamberlain. That's really all you need to say. And then, you know, Joel Embiid also, you know, he hasn't played very much, but he can do some damage as well. So to me, Kansas beats Michigan State pretty easily.
Do you mean Denzel Valentine?
No. Denzel Valentine is an active player. Darnell Valentine played in like the 1970s.
Okay, I got confused. Oh, yeah, because you're talking about Kansas.
And,
yeah,
and Denzel Valentine went to Michigan State. And Darnell Valentine went to Kansas.
That's why I got confused for a second.
Guys, I have a few really cool stats on Wilt. Let me do it. It takes like
give us
minutes.
The stats.
Okay. No, everybody. Okay, fine.
No, everybody does not know this. Everybody does
he
not
scored
know
100
this.
Points in
Wilt
one game.
Wilt has 118 50-point games in his career. That is equal to the 7 most prolific 50-point scorers in NBA history combined. So Michael Jordan, Allen Iverson, Rick Barry, whatever. Take the 7 next guys after Wilt. They equal his number of 50-point games. That's 1. 2. He has 32 60-point games. That's 4 shy of the total of every other player in NBA history. So basically he has as many 60-point games by himself as the rest of NBA history. 3. He has 7 40-40 games. 40 points, 40 rebounds. Rest of NBA history, 0. Let's go to 30-30 games. That's at least possible. Nobody can get 40-40 games except this freak, Wilt Chamberlain. We'll go to 30-30 games. Bill Russell has 3. Good for him. I hate Bill. You know, I'm famously underrate Bill Russell because he averaged 16 points a game playing at the same time as Wilt, who had 50-point seasons. So Bill Russell, but good for him, 3 30-30 games. 3 guys had 2. 9 guys have had 1. So what is that? 9, 12, 13 guys have had 30-30 games. How many 30-30 games do you think Wilt had? You guys guess. Bill Russell, second place with 3.
Well, I mean, he averaged 50 and 25 in a season, so I'm going to guess he had like 70 of them.
Keeve?
I'm not sure. Tell me.
128 30-30 games. Second place is 3. First place is 128. That cannot be ignored. Other people
Jared,
were playing
how,
then.
You know that Cy Young had like 511 wins or shutouts.
Okay,
or
so why didn't guys who played when Cy Young played have that many wins?
All right,
that
so he was the best of his era. Freaking Jake Voskal would have had 30-30 every night if he
give
was
me
in
a
era.
Okay.
That's so a good callback, Jake Voskal. All right, Keith, who's winning, Kansas or Michigan State?
I'm really torn. I'm not married to either of these teams. They each, at this level in the Elite Eight, they each have flaws.
Yeah, pick one.
I'm gonna go with Michigan State. I think that just Michigan State's front line is tough to deal with, and I have Michigan State. But I
wait, hold on.
Like
Michigan State's front line and Kansas's front line of Wilt Chamberlain and another Hall of Famer Clyde Lovellette is not tough to deal with.
Clyde Lovellette could freaking. I mean,
Keith, we're staying within eras. Kyle Lovellette right. had 5.
It doesn't matter, Jared.
Seasons.
You're picking Kansas, right?
Obviously. Wilt alone. Okay, right. Wilt alone takes down Michigan State.
All right. So we have Kentucky against Kansas in the Final Four. We'll get to that, but let's get to the other side of the bracket. Mm-hmm. Let's start with just another brutal. This should be a Final Four matchup: UCLA and Georgetown. I have both of these teams in my top 4 overall. Georgetown, you know, only 45 players, so a brutally low 5 seed, but you know. This is a monster matchup. So let's start with the Georgetown team. You got the 3 Hall of Fame centers, Dikembe Mutombo, Patrick Ewing, Alonzo Mourning. Not just, you know, all great Hall of Fame centers, but 3 of the top, 8 defensive centers of all time? Like, all great defensive players. And then they have Allen Iverson in the backcourt to score. The problem is, you know, again, when you're a 5 seed, drops up very quickly after that. It's really, this is a 4-man team. You know, their top guys on their bench are Greg Monroe and Jeff Green, a couple of active, you know, very mediocre players. UCLA has a 5 Hall of Famer team that can trot out with Kareem, Bill Walton, Jamal Wilkes, Gail Goodrich, and Reggie Miller. They also have a number of active superstars, Kevin Love and Russell Westbrook. They have Marquez Johnson, who to me is one of the most underrated players in NBA
Definitely.
History.
Should really be, one of the most underrated for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, should be in the Hall of Fame. Yeah, he was the leader of those amazing Bucks teams in the 80s.
Good
just a phenomenal defensive player. You know, top 100 to me all time. His career is relatively short, which is, you know, one thing that hurts him. And then UCLA at their bench, just, you know, so deep. Baron Davis, Kiki VanderWeeg, who, you know, scored 20 a game for his career. Sven Nader, who averaged 12.
See, this
12.
Is another this is another sort of Chester only knows games in charts, Jared.
Why?
And has never actually watched the game because he just called Kiki VanderWeeg, Kiki VanderWeeg.
No, he didn't. I didn't think so.
Anyway, you called him VanderWeeg.
I put Drew Holiday as the last guy on the bench for UCLA because I think he's
Chester, did you call him VanderWeeg?
He'll admit it. He'll admit it.
Wait, as opposed to what?
VanderWeeg.
His name, which is VanderWeeg?
Oh, whatever. Okay, sorry.
I guess you don't follow tennis.
I've heard his name 100 times, though. Yeah, he's on ESPN all the time.
You don't follow tennis. His daughter is like one of the best.
Anyways, he scored like 28 points a game one year in the 80s, I think. So
no, he was one of those classic.
Well, that culminated in that 188-184 game, right?
Yeah,
he had like 47, but so did like everyone else in the game.
All right, so anyway, so this is a phenomenal... Phenomenal matchup. To me, the reason UCLA is going to beat Georgetown fairly easily is because Georgetown just it only has one dimension. Other than those three big guys and Iverson, there's really nothing there. They don't have ways to play a lot of different ways. They don't have any kind of shooting whatsoever. And UCLA has Reggie Miller and a million other shooters. And so to me, by the way, UCLA has Kareem, who's, you know, probably the best player of all time, certainly in the conversation, and eons better than the four, you know, epic Hall of Famers on Georgetown. So to me, UCLA wins this fairly easily. But Georgetown, just a monster team. And, you know, they're definitely going to start punching people late in the fourth quarter. They're going to go down swinging. They're going to try and injure someone for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Keith, what's your take?
Georgetown is a matchups team. I feel like there are a lot of teams that they would have just blown out of the water with their size, but this is not one of them. UCLA in a route.
Yeah, well, the problem is UCLA just can do everything. So Georgetown, if a team can't handle Georgetown's size, they're in trouble. But UCLA can play Kareem and Bill Walton if they want at the same time.
They can do anything. UCLA can match up with anything. I just want to say one thing. I know it's an easy – it's a blowout to me for UCLA. Just I say the lineup I would run out for Georgetown would be Ewing, Mourning, Iverson, Floyd. But instead of Mutombo, because you can't have three centers, we argued about this a little bit last time, I would put – Otto Porter in there, a perfect stretch three and D guy who like fits perfectly to that.
I think I would actually play Mutombo over Mourning on a team like that because like Floyd and Ewing could really handle the ball, and Mutombo's defense is just so much better than the other two.
Yeah, Iverson and Ewing, you're getting enough scoring.
But it doesn't matter. It's a 48-minute game. You just each of the three of them.
I'm just saying,
Chester
and I argued a little bit. I think when you were off last time about can you play Mutombo, Ewing, and Mourning together on a floor, and I don't think you can.
You would not be able to get an open shot within 20 feet of the basket against those three.
Mm-hmm. You can't.
They would cover the entire. Let's get to Michigan against UConn. This is what Keeve's here for. We don't even need to hear how he's voting. Michigan's the 3 seed. UConn is the 7. I have UConn as a slight favorite, though. Let's start with that UConn team. Just as a reminder, Andre Drummond, Clifford Robinson, Rip Hamilton, Ray Allen, Kemba Walker, Rudy Gay off the bench, Caron Butler, a lot of small fours off the bench, Daniel Marshall, Emeka Okafor. Michigan. Chris Webber and Glenn Rice, Jalen Rose, Jamal Crawford, Rudy Tomjanovich, who remembers a coach and is getting punched in the face, but you know was a very good power forward for a long time in the late 60s, early 70s. And then off the bench, Juwan Howard, Cassie Russell, Ricky Green. I like Michigan, but I have UConn advancing here. Keeve, I assume you do as well.
Well, listen, I'm not having UConn winning this tournament. Michigan's a little weaker than I think people would think. Part of it is because the Fab Five, which gives them 3 of their 6 players. They've really not been able to... They've been pretty good. After the Fab Five, they were bad for a long time. Now they're sort of a perennial, pretty good team that'll occasionally make a run. But they have not put players in the pros, as evidenced by they have a lot of like good guards.
They have zero Hall of Famers. They have zero Hall of Famers. Chris Webber will be in the Hall of Fame.
Who are the Michigan guys in the league right now? So you have Hardaway Jr., Burke, LeVert. Jamal Crawford is somehow still in the NBA, but he's not a modern guy.
The funny thing is that team that made a run, I think they lost in the finals about 5 years ago or so, had like...
Yeah, 2013.
Had like at least 4 NBA, or maybe 5 NBA players on it. It had Tim Hardaway Jr., Trey Burke was like the star of that team.
Mm-hmm.
What's his name? The shooter, the white shooting guard who's been bouncing around the NBA. He was like picked in the lottery.
And what was the name of the big guy who got injured the next year in the tournament who was drafted by OKC? White guy? Party animal?
McGarry, Mitch McGarry, Mitch McGarry.
Yeah, Mitch McGarry.
He's out of the NBA, I think.
And who's that shooter? Yeah. The white shooting guard. He's bounced around the whole. Maybe he's on the Nets now. Anyway, they had like four or five NBA players on that team. They did make it to the finals, but that's pretty crazy. Just to your point, but none of them are great NBA players. So
But the bottom line is this:
Michigan's
best player is Chris Webber, and Chris Webber in the clutch folded in college, folded in the NBA, and he's going to fold to this.
Don't let him hear you say that, or he'll never talk to you again.
Yeah.
Right, but so, now the question is: who's the best player in this game? Is it Ray Allen? It's probably Allen and not Webber, right?
At his peak, it's Webber. Yeah, I mean, Webber was an MVP candidate in the way that Allen wasn't, but Allen had the better career overall.
Right, exactly. I agree with that.
LeVert was a freshman. By the way, that team was Glenn Robinson 3, Spike Albrecht, Trey Burke, Mitch McGarry, Hardaway Jr., Stauskas.
That's the guy I was talking about.
And LeVert, Stauskas, who ended up being the best pro of all
of them.
So
it's 5 or 6 pros on that team. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Yes. I have UConn winning, but this is a pretty low-level game at this point in the tournament, to be honest. UConn has a fun bench. They're decent for a 7-game series because they could do a lot of things. They have a lot of guys who could play the 3 and the 4, which is useful for this tournament. But Drummond is like the homeless man's Mutombo for this tournament. But I have UConn winning by 2.
But you agree, Keeve, that UConn loses to UCLA.
UConn obviously gets demolished. Ray Allen probably starts over Reggie Miller, but other than that, nobody really makes the team, right? Who on UConn makes UCLA's team?
Would make the lineup or would even make the 12-man?
Makes the 12.
Lineup. Oh, guys, the 12.
Yeah, Clifford Robinson makes the 12. Rip Hamilton probably makes the 12 over Drew Holiday.
Ray Allen,
I mean,
obviously.
Who is that? No, I mean, Clifford Robinson didn't have a better career. Was he ever a better player than Sven Nader? Like, I don't think so.
That's hard to
compare. He played twice as many games. I mean, he played a long
time.
But
I don't think he was a better player. Nader was an easy double.
Kemba Walker. Drew Holiday's the 12th guy
really
on the UCLA
player,
bench. Kemba Walker makes it over Drew Holiday.
Oh, yeah. Kemba Walker's better than Drew. But by the way, Drew Holiday is only moving up that UCLA list. He was having a really good year until he got hurt.
Yeah, I mean, I have Sidney Wicks for his overall career just slightly ahead of Drew Holiday, but I put Holiday on the team because I thought
they also had some guys who like smartly burned out. Like Emeka's numbers are only good because like he literally didn't play when he was injured versus like putting up 4 years of like 2 and 2 and destroying his numbers, so he's a double-double guy.
And Ben Gordon also weirdly fizzled early. You know,
well, Ben Gordon had issues. Like Ben Gordon might be in jail right now. Even like he got kicked out of the G League last year. Like he became a problem child. But yes, he did fizzle out. I mean, a lot of guys. Even like he didn't make their team, but like El Amin also was like sort of good for 2 years and then never.
El Amin was never a good pro.
No, but I'm
call it El Amin, baby, Minnesota boy.
Yeah.
North Minneapolis.
Okay, so
you know the irony. Do you know why Khalid El-Amin went to UConn? Because Minnesota was too good. They made the Final Four his senior year of high school, North Minneapolis.
Uh-huh.
And they were too good.
That's the Sean Leonard era?
No, that was the Bobby Jackson era.
Oh, okay, fine.
Yeah, and Quincy Lewis. And so he was told that he wouldn't get to play too much, and so he went at least as a freshman, a sophomore. They had another guy on their bench that Final Four year, I forget his name, who transferred to Duke the next year and fizzled out. But so Khalid El-Amin went to UConn, and then obviously, you know, UConn is infinitely better than Minnesota since then. Although, actually not now, the last couple of years UConn's been.
No, UConn is in a rough spot. Although,
all right, let's
like
get
the
to
coach,
the
early.
Yeah, let's get to the last region. UNC has the least competition, I think, of all the regions. There's no other top 10 team. They're going to start against LSU. LSU is almost like Houston in that they have, you know, three just elite guys. Shaq and Bob Pettit, the best front line probably in this whole tournament. You know, the best center of our lifetimes and the best power forward, you know, pre-Karl Malone and Tim Duncan, Kevin Garnett. And then Pistol Pete Maravich. But other than that, LSU, again, they're a lower seed. They don't have a lot of depth. And, they, you know, Ben Simmons is forced to start for this team, and, you know, he can't shoot. Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf, Chris Jackson is the starting point guard on this team. And you look at their bench, and there's nobody you've really ever heard of. UNC, you know, has 5 Hall of Famers, Bob McAdoo, Billy Cunningham, James Worthy, Charlie Scott, Michael Jordan, Vince Carter will be in the Hall of Fame. Bobby Jones, just an elite defensive player for the Sixers and other teams in the 70s and 80s. Walter Davis, who poured in a ton of points. Rasheed Wallace, Brad Daugherty, who's very underrated because his career was short. Anton Jameson, Jerry Stackhouse. I mean, Sam Perkins played 1,300 games, can't even make this team. So UNC obviously is going to beat LSU.
Mm-hmm. You're both going to pick UNC, I assume. So, Keith, I assume you're picking UNC. I don't want to.
Yeah, I'm going to pick UNC. By the way, you know what Brad Daugherty did for many years after he
was a NASCAR announcer.
NASCAR yeah. analyst. I think
as all 7 foot black NBA veterans do. Yes. They become NASCAR
announcers.
I want to just talk about this LSU team for a second because it's like a really interesting team. Like, everyone knows Shaq, the most dominant force besides Wilt in NBA history. People know Bob Pettit was a great player. I mean, for a long time, he was considered the best power forward ever and all that kind of stuff. Maybe still. 26.4 and 16.2 for his career. He played 11 seasons in the NBA. His first 10 seasons, obviously, he made the All-Star team every year. He was first-team All-NBA in his first 10 seasons. I know the league was small, but still, first-team All-NBA in his first 10 seasons. In his 11th season, he got injured, so he only played 50 games. So what happened? Second-team All-NBA. After that, retired. That's the end of his career. I mean, that is apex career right there. So he's... Again, 26.4 and 16.2 for his career, and base all NBA every year of his career. That's an insane career, okay? And back then, they didn't all play. I don't know. I'm not sure if people back in like the – I feel like most of the careers back in the 50s and the 60s were shorter than they are, you know, in the 80s and 90s, obviously, for medicine, things like that. They got
Yeah, because the guys were smoking cigarettes and flying, you know, like
that
economy
too, right,
class.
That too, that too.
Yeah.
So the guy played 11 years and was first-team All-NBA basically every single year. And then just a quick thing on Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf. People, I think he's more famous for changing his name from Chris Jackson to Abdul-Rauf, and he didn't have a great NBA career by any stretch, but just like an interesting little tidbit on him that I remember some like thing ESPN showed, you know, when I was a kid, probably in 1993 or something like that, was he had like some form of Tourette syndrome. I don't know if you guys
yes.
knew that or not.
Yeah, I did
and,
know that.
And to me, it was like probably like a motor tic disorder, which kind of means like, you know, he twitches and stuff like that. So basically mm-hmm. what happened was, according to him, it made him a much, much better shooter. And the reason was, sometimes when you have that disorder, it's sort of this kind of thing like an OCD thing where everything has to kind of feel perfect until you like – so he would like have 30-point games and they would win, but he'd be miserable because he felt like he was burying threes, but it didn't feel perfect. The wrist wasn't perfect. His elbow wasn't perfect. His feet weren't perfect. So he would practice in the gym for hours and hours and hours until he hit, I forgot the number, but X number straight three-pointers that felt perfect. So he could have hit 50 in a row, but if they didn't mm-hmm. feel good, it didn't matter. So I think that's just like an interesting story about him, that where his disorder kind of helped him become probably a great, even a greater shooter. And he's another guy similar to Mark Price, didn't have nearly as good a career, but was another very diminutive guy who was a great, great shooter. And then you have Pistol Pete Maravich, who's like one of the, there's movies about this guy. He just like his numbers in LSU were, as a freshman, he averaged 43 a game. As a sophomore, 43 a game. As a junior, 44 a game. As a senior, 44 a game. So his NBA career is considered a disappointment because he only averaged 24 a game. And remember, this is at, without the three-point ball, when the stories of him was that he pulled up from
half
court.
Yeah, but he also barely played. I mean, his career ended pretty quickly.
He had a weird career, but... Yeah. Again, another very interesting – I'm just saying it's a very, very interesting team. And Ben Simmons has potential to be an extremely interesting player. Here's a walking double-double, a 6'10 point guard.
Okay, and Michael Jordan is lighting all three of these guys up. So let's stop talking about
LSU. I'm just giving – listen.
Congratulations.
Are we talking about basketball?
I like
the point
Chester
of the podcast, rushing right?
the podcast because usually Chester is slowing us down. I like this.
I mean, come on. I didn't say they were going to win. I said let me tell, you know, talk
all
a
right,
little bit about
I
basketball.
Appreciate it.
Get out of here with your facts.
Okay, let's get to our last matchup in the Sweet 16, St. John's against Indiana, a couple of schools that were relevant for a long, long time in college basketball, so they sent a lot of guys to the NBA. St. John's hasn't sent a relevant NBA player since, you know, Ron Artest went nuts and changed his name to Meta World Peace. But they have a good starting, you know, backcourt in Mark Jackson, Chris Mullen, and Ron Artest / Meta World Peace. The problem is their front line, Billy Poults and Leroy Ellis, not a lot of offense there, a little bit weak. Indiana has a couple of active swing guys in Eric Gordon and Victor Oladipo, in addition to the Van Arsdale brothers, Tom and Dick. But, of course, this team is anchored by Hall of Famer Isaiah Thomas at the point and a couple of Hall of Fame big men in Walt Bellamy and George McGinnis. And so Bellamy and McGinnis are both going to easily put up 20 and 10, and they're going to trounce St. John's.
Yeah, they're going to kill St. John's. St. John's also a chemistry nightmare. You have Meta World Peace, who is a nutty guy. Chris Mullen, who's going to think he's in charge because he's literally the coach of the team right now. He's the coach of St. John's. Mark Jackson, who's going to think he should be the coach. Right. And then you got freaking Malik Seeley on the bench who's dead. And Jason Williams, who I think is in jail.
A little respect.
This is a crazy...
Malik Seeley, hold on. Malik Seeley was killed by a drunk driver with, like, on a suspended
license.
I didn't
know why he died.
He didn't do anything bad.
He was on the T-Wolves then, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was driving home from Kevin Garnett's party. Yeah.
Yeah, Indiana blows the doors off. Also, Oladipo, you know, I know Chester doesn't care about active players.
No,
but Oladipo,
I agree. I kick one of the Van Arsdale twins out, and I put Oladipo in that starting
line. Let's see Oladipo have more than one relevant NBA season.
He could dunk both Van Arsdales if you use them as basketballs. Like, you ever have a one-on-two? When I was a kid, you had, like, a one-on-two with, like, meet you and a friend against, like, a really good player, and they just beat you 11-0 because they're so much better. And that's what – Oladipo could beat them in a one-on-two, the Van Arsdale brothers. What about Harry Van Arsdale? Is he on the team?
All right. UNC.
So it's Indiana, UNC, but UNC demolishes Indiana. There's nothing to talk about.
Yeah, of course. Exactly. So good job, Indiana. You made the Elite Eight. So our final four is we have UNC, UCLA, and then on the other side we have Kentucky and Kansas. Not a lot of surprises there.
Pretty chalk from you guys. Pretty chalk.
Yeah, these are four of my five best overall teams. The only one that's missing is Georgetown, which already got taken down by UCLA.
All right, so what's going first, Kentucky versus Kansas? This is pretty close.
Sure. So let's do Kentucky versus Kansas. So the issue here is Kentucky definitely has more bigs to throw at Will Chamberlain, but in the era, Will Chamberlain is so much more dominant than Boogie and Unibrow and Cat. So I think Kansas has the advantage there. The problem is, again, like Kansas, like their only guards are JoJo White, Kirk Heinrich, Darnell Valentine.
I think Paul Pierce probably handles the ball for that team.
Yeah,
no, JoJo White is legit. Is a legit point guard. So JoJo White's a Hall of Fame point guard. So I don't think you need Paul Pierce. I mean, I hear you, but Paul Pierce, use him for what you use Paul Pierce for. I think they're not deep in that position, but JoJo White's a legit player. You're talking about a Hall of Fame.
Yeah, player. Well, I mean, the truth is JoJo White's career was better than any guard on Kentucky. Now John Wall and Rajon Rondo weren't done. But, you know, are either one of them making the Hall
of
Fame?
Like, I know Lavalette is a Hall of Famer, but him and Bridges don't play for Kentucky even off the bench. That's a big problem.
Well, you have to think about them in their era. Clyde Lavalette.
Yeah. Clyde Lavalette was an automatic All-Star every year of his career. He's 101.
So is Boogie. Like, I mean, people don't like him, but
not anymore. You think Boogie will ever make another All-Star team?
I mean, if he switches teams, he'll make every All-Star game.
I don't know.
Do you know what he was doing last year before he got hurt? He was putting up 30s and 20s every night.
He had an injury that no one has ever come back from.
Okay, it is possible that he doesn't come back, but I also think, give him a year, he might be okay.
I'm gonna give the slight edge here to Kansas because of Will Chamberlain.
So close. Yeah, I'm going to give it to Kentucky. Let's let Jared decide. To me, this would be like go to seven if it was best of seven, I think.
So I hadn't thought about this one at all because I had, I had OSU. Wait, who did I have different here?
Yeah, you had Kentucky losing to Ohio State.
I had Ohio State beating Kentucky, so I hadn't thought about this until now. It's interesting because, as Alex mentioned, one thing that I was complaining about before about Kentucky is having too many big men. Now suddenly they have a whole bunch of big men they could throw at Wilt, so that actually helps them in this one.
So they're going to do hack a Wilt?
and Wilt
not a good free throw shooter.
And Wilt couldn't shoot free throws, so that helps, but I don't want to betray the old eras, okay? So a guy like
Clyde, by the way, isn't Paul Pierce, isn't the second best player in this team, in this game, also on Kansas? So they have the best two players. Kentucky has the better team over a seven-game series, but Kansas has by far the best player and probably the second best player.
It's an interesting point. I mean, Pierce is definitely going to have a better career than Wall at this point. Davis still has a chance to be better than Pierce, though.
Yeah, Davis is a better player than Pierce. Obviously, it's not his fault that he's 25, 26 years old. Davis is definitely a better player. We'll see what happens.
The peaks, Davis, Boogie, and Cat are all, like, Paul Pierce was never an MVP candidate. Right. So all three of those guys, their peaks are going to be
higher. Could easily become a better player than Paul Pierce. DeMarcus, because of his injury, probably not, but he also could have. But whatever, that's not necessarily the point, who's the best player. I don't want to betray the old eras, right? So we have this guy, Clyde Lavalette. Most listeners don't even know who that is. Well, he's a guy with like five straight 2010 seasons. He made four All-Star games. That was a superstar player in his time.
But to be fair, Cliff Hagan was the same in a slightly later era.
True. Bill Bridges, who I admit I didn't know anything about, I looked him up. He was like
12-12.
A 12-12, like defensive, brute, like powerful, athletic guy. Mm-hmm. So to me, he's the kind of guy that like matches up.
Yeah, he couldn't get into a game of Rucker Park today.
No, he's an athletic. No, more of a modern type of player. Yeah, at least
he couldn't start in Lebanon, Bill Bridges.
Yeah, well, that's not the game. Okay, we're not doing that. So we're gonna keep going back to that, but that's not what we're doing. So, listen, I'm a Wilt fanboy. I'm a Wilt fanboy. I have plenty more stats that I'm holding in the bag for a later episode on Wilt that I'm not going to on you guys. JoJo White.
Should we let Jared have his own episode where just it's like stat monologues, Chester?
Well, that's basically my Twitter thing.
All right, who's winning, Kansas or Kentucky?
I'm giving it to Kansas. Screw Kentucky. Let's go. Kansas.
All right, so Kansas with a mild upset there.
And who are they going to lose to in the championship? This is the title game right now.
All right, so it's UCLA against UNC. Spoiler alert, these are, in my opinion, the two best teams in this tournament.
Yeah, this is the championship game. I mean, Rasheed Wallace's numbers, because he stuck around for a while, aren't impressive, but, like, I mean, Rasheed could, like, you could argue Rasheed starts for UCLA, right, instead of Love. He's not as interesting of a player, but he was probably a better player.
Yeah, but you can do things the other way also. You can flip it the other way also.
Yeah, I mean, all these guys can be playing. Yeah, I mean, these two teams are both stacked. So this is where I think I'm going to bring up the – so even though I have UCLA as the number one seed, and even though in the whole tournament, and even though I think they're a little bit better than UNC, this is where I'm going to bring up a topic that we've been discussing in our NBA group chat.
I know where this is going.
Which is the Michael Jordan versus LeBron. The way I've distilled this is if you have a bad team and you want to turn that bad team into an instant contender, you want LeBron because LeBron can do everything. But if you have a good team and you want that good team to become immortal, that good team to become unstoppable, that's where you want Michael Jordan. So on an all-star team, you'd rather have Michael Jordan than LeBron. Mm-hmm. On a crappy team, you'd rather have LeBron than Michael Jordan. So you look at this UNC team and the UCLA team, and UCLA overall is a little bit better, I think. But Reggie Miller is going up against Michael Jordan. Like that's
which happens quite often, by the way.
Yeah. That's going to be a math. Like, even though, like, Kareem is better than Bob McAdoo, even though they played at the same time and McAdoo stole a couple MVPs from Kareem. You know, everyone else, James Worthy, Marcus Johnson, again, playing in the same era, pretty similar. Marcus Johnson's a little bit better, although, you know, James Worthy more famous and in the Hall of Fame because, you know, he played on the Lakers. You know, a lot, I would say that Russell Westbrook probably better than, you know, any other guard on UNC team. Probably career is going to end up ahead of Vince Carter. I already have him ahead of Vince Carter, so obviously he will be. Mm-hmm. But to me, Michael Jordan gives UNC the edge. And so even though they're like a half point underdog, I have UNC winning this game.
You're making me sick, basically.
Well, hold on. Jared, you could decide it because I'm going to go with UCLA. I just think Worthy is so much better than Marquez Johnson.
You're wrong. You're objectively wrong. Marquez Johnson was a better scorer, was a much better defensive player.
Yeah. How many rings did Marquez Johnson win?
Yeah, but Keith, because
he didn't play with Kareem. Now he is playing with Kareem.
But no, I didn't finish what I was saying. But North Carolina doesn't really have a ball handler, so Michael Jordan's going to play point guard, which
that's a problem. Yeah, he didn't really do that. Did you watch any Bulls games in the 90s?
Well, I did. You didn't have a TV until Jordan retired.
What are you talking about?
Jordan game
you think Ron Harper was the ball handler? Michael Jordan was the ball handler for those teams. Michael Jordan,
Jared,
like Allen Iverson.
Let's be honest. Chester's never watched a full Michael Jordan game in his whole life.
Oh,
it's true.
God, what are you talking about?
You did have a TV in your house when you were a kid, and then you went away to school.
First of all, I did have a TV in my house. It was behind lock and key, but I stole the key. I was the biggest Jazz fan in the universe in 97 and 98.
Chester, pronounce the guy whose last name is spelled Jordan.
What is it? Mikael Yardane? I don't know how to pronounce it. Yeah.
Okay. That's by the way, that was always urban legend, right?
What?
Forget it.
I missed that.
All right. So I just think the UCLA team is such a traditionally good team, and they have such an amazing backcourt for like 5 minutes a game where you could just throw out, you know, Baron Davis, Kiki and Sven Nader, and Bill Walton, and it's like such a second unit hockey style that'll come
Hold
in.
Hold on,
and
we'll play Rasheed Wallace and Brad Daugherty are on the second unit on UNC.
Oh, yeah,
Charlie Scott's
guards?
A Hall of
Course, they don't wear the guards on the second unit.
Charlie Scott's a Hall of Fame guard who averaged 21, 4, and 5 for his career.
I mean,
he's the 11th guy on the team.
48 minutes in this one game, although it is his third game of the day. It's a little tricky.
Yeah. And Vince Carter's averages are down a little bit because he's playing forever.
Actually, no, they only played one
NBA,
game in day one, so they played four today.
Yeah,
I'm going with UCLA. So Jared's going to have to decide this. UCLA to me wins by seven.
Keith, I think I really like what you said about UCLA. They basically have a hockey team. Okay, you have. Let's just so for those who don't have it in front of them, which is probably all of you, Chester very very nicely and very Chestery put out rosters with the stats of all the players and how he would do the starting team and the bench and everything like that. So Alex Chester's starting team for UCLA is Kareem, top four player of all time. I don't think anybody argues that. Kevin Love at power forward, Marcus Johnson at the three, Reggie at the two, Russell Westbrook at the one. All guys who perfectly fit their position. But then you go to their bench, you have Gail Goodridge, point guard, shooting guard, who you can, let's call Gail Goodridge a shooting guard in it for the second unit. Baron Davis could be your second unit point guard, or Drew Holiday could be your second unit point guard. Kiki Vandeweghe, a 20-point-a-game scorer for 800 games in his career.
Never played a lick of defense. You don't need scoring like that on these teams.
Quintessential three-man. Or you want to use Jamal Wilkes, a Hall of Famer, who is a small forward.
Yeah.
You don't want to use Kiki, we'll use Jamal Wilkes. 18-6.
Yeah. Kiki doesn't play in this game. There's no chance he gets off the
bench. You want a defensive stopper, a point guard? Drew Holiday. You want one of the best shot blockers in NBA history? We'll put Sven Nader in there. I mean, this team is so well-balanced. So Michael Jordan, well, who's he guarding? He's going to chase around Russell Westbrook, that maniac who's playing 48 minutes and going crazy the whole time. I mean, they don't have a point guard. Yeah, Michael Jordan could bring the ball up the court and he can handle the ball, but he's not a prototypical point guard, and they don't have a dominant center. So
hold on a second. Bob McAdoo was the second best center in the 70s after Kareem.
He won
multiple MVPs. Go look at his numbers.
Bob McAdoo was not a real center. He was a skinny. He was not a real center, Bob McAdoo. Look at his size. I mean, I don't have it in front of me.
He
weighed 230 pounds. He could not guard Kareem. There's no way McAdoo guarded Kareem.
First of all, he won two MVPs from Kareem in Kareem's peak.
I didn't say he wasn't a great player. I said he's not a prototypical center.
Billy Cunningham, one of the most underrated players of all time. You know how many guys ever averaged 21, 10, and 4 for their career?
Is he a prototypical center?
No, he's their power forward.
So the argument I'm making right now is that UCLA's team is they're both extremely talented teams. Nobody would argue that. It's very obvious.
Okay.
But I'm saying UCLA's balance. They have one of the greatest centers ever, and then Russell Westbrook as a point guard. I happen to be a huge Russell Westbrook stan, but he's a great player, Russell Westbrook, and a point guard who can get everybody involved, score himself.
Have you seen him perform in the All-Star games? Because, and I'm a Russell Westbrook stan also, and Russell Westbrook to me is like a poor man's, Russell Westbrook is best on a team like that Oklahoma City team where he won the MVP. He's not good with other good players. He always loses All-Star games. He chased Kevin Durant out of town. He wants to do everything. He has to understand that he's like the seventh option on this team.
I think
he's a negative.
That's a fair argument, but I'm just
James Worthy knows what it's like to be a fourth option. Vince Carter, you know, can he also step back and be, you know, Rasheed Wallace and Brad Daugherty, by the way, again, off the bench, Daugherty, 19-10 for his career.
Oh,
if only his career lasted longer, he'd be a Hall of Famer for sure.
Yeah, listen, this is the finals. They're obviously both great, so I have to find something to differentiate it. Your differentiation was Michael Jordan doesn't lose big games, and that's fair. That's very fair. Mine is they don't have a point guard or a prototypical center, I mean, except Daugherty. They don't have a pro, and I'm telling you, Bob McAdoo, I don't know what he's listed at, whatever, but Bob McAdoo is not a pro. Ask some of our old listeners. Bob McAdoo was not a prototypical. Bob McAdoo had no chance at guarding Kareem. Nobody has a chance at guarding Westbrook unless it's Jordan, and then he'll be exhausted chasing around Westbrook the whole time.
First of all, Bobby Jones is one of the best 10 defensive players of all time, best 12 defensive players of all time.
He's a power forward. I keep focusing on it. Point guard, center. Yeah. The two most important positions, arguably, on the court. UCLA has great at each of those.
The greatest team of all time, the 1997 Chicago Bulls, did not have a point guard. You know why? Because they had Michael Jordan. Yeah. You don't need a point guard when you have Michael Jordan. This is ridiculous. Michael Jordan and Vince Carter and Walter Davis and Charlie Scott. I mean, they have four top 25 all-time shooting guards.
Alex, which team do you have ranked number one overall?
UCLA.
Okay, so you can't be going crazy when we're picking UCLA. I'm admitting it's extremely, extremely close matchup. So what am I going by? So you're going by a fair thing. You're saying Michael Jordan wins close games. I'm saying I'm going by a team that fits best. By the way, we haven't even mentioned Bill Walton. I know you killed Bill Walton last podcast.
He's great in college.
One of the great years of all time. You don't think so, but everybody who was around then says it. Everybody who was around then says it.
Yeah.
So,
can I point out one difference between Bill Walton and every other great center of his era? The color of his skin. All right, I'm not going to get into this too much, but you know, there was a lot of that motivating the love for Bill Walton in those.
Know if that's true. All I know is I hear that Bill Walton's 77 season was an incredible. I know the stats aren't insane, but
look at the teams that won the Washington in 78, Seattle in 79. It was a low point for the league. Garbage teams were winning.
But this is my backup center to Kareem. That's who we're arguing right now. Sven Nader is my triple backup, one of the best shot blockers in NBA history. Kiki Vandeweghe, a 20 20-point scorer for 800
right.
games.
Okay.
Is
all right.
My
okay, you've made your point. UCLA beats UNC, and UCLA wins this whole tournament, correct?
Congratulations. The Bruins are cutting down the nets.
Yeah. So I have UNC winning the whole tournament, but they don't even make the final. They are upset by by UCLA, and UCLA is our champions. So congratulations to the Bruins. Kareem, who's the MVP of the tournament? Is it a Kareem, probably?
Yeah, Kareem's the MVP, no question.
You know what? I'll make you happy. We'll give it to Michael Jordan in a losing effort.
Ooh, in the semifinals? That's crazy. The losing over the finals.
No, well, we do have a third-place game, obviously.
That was the semifinals.
No, we just argued Carolina and UCLA in the finals. Oh, I'm sorry. That was for the – oh, I'm sorry.
It was the fact, though.
UCLA plays Kansas in the finals.
Yeah, UCLA wins by 23, by the way. Kareem shuts down Wilt, and Miller and Russ make it rain.
Oh, well then – yeah, take it back. Wilt, MVP in a losing effort.
Oh, okay, that's fair. That makes sense.
Got to stay on brand.
Okay. All right, Chester.
All right, by the way, I also did my all-conference teams, and I had the ACC winning that because of Jordan, but I guess you're going to tell me it's going to be the Pac-12 because Kareem is going to beat him again, right?
I didn't say one-on-one. Kareem is better than Jordan. I think I explained my point pretty clearly.
All right, so congratulations. The UCLA Bruins have won this tournament. Congratulations to the listeners. That was 3 hours of basketball talk.
Mm-hmm. Next week, we're doing brackets. We're doing real March Madness.
Real March Madness brackets. Okay. Jared, what do you have to plug for us? Should we talk about how tall is Akiva Wienerker?
Is that what you make fun of when I'm not here? You talk about how tall I am?
He's 5'7 and a half.
Jared claims he can measure everyone within an eighth of an inch by seeing a blurry photo of them from the back one time.
I was 1 minute away from getting out.
I think I'm just
1 minute
5'7".
Away.
I think I'm closer to 5'6 and a half than 5'7 now, but I think I'm
5'7". Oh, wow, Jared Jerome, you're stupid.
But I don't know. I haven't been measured since I was like 14, so I have no idea. I don't go to the doctor. I could have my wife, I could stay, you know, my kids have a thing where it's like they, you know, like a height chart. I could have my wife do that.
Check it. You're 5'7 and a half.
It's funny because my daughter was growing so much and she was like almost off the chart at a certain point. But now it's like she hits 13.
Have you ever formally explained how like each of your kids is like an elite athlete in a separate sport with, you know.
The boy is a clown.
You said one of your sons isn't good, but one of your daughters is like.
No, my oldest daughter was just tall. She's not. I don't think she's here. She's not like a star. She's on the bench. She's on the city basketball team, which is nice. But she's the junkyard dog of the team. Like you know, she's just
Jerome
rebounds
Williams.
And scrappiness.
Georgetown's Jerome Williams.
Yes, she is literally the junkyard dog. Like that's what the coach even said. She comes in defense, steals, rebounds, hustling. They do not pass her the ball. She's not a good shooter. But my daughter's good at gymnastics. My second daughter is good at gymnastics. And then my youngest son might be like Messi or Pele or somebody. He's like he threw a ball from a couch to the dining room table, which was like 8 feet, and knocked my glasses straight off. They fell off my head when he threw a ball.
So I coach my 9-year-old son in Little League. So we were having like a preliminary kind of practice, sort of like ranking the players to like.
Are you the head coach? Are you like the main coach on the team?
I'm like, I'm the coach for my son's team. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So
are you gonna give your son like he's gonna play shortstop, lead off? You're gonna be an unfair dad.
I'm the opposite. But
that's
whatever.
Good.
He's okay. He's solid.
You're Richard Williams.
My wife was out, so I had to bring away my youngest son, who's 3, and he's like way ahead per age, you know, compared to my other son.
Right.
So like while like the other like groups were doing something and I wasn't involved, I was having like a catch with him, and he zips the ball in this little three. It's like funny when these little kids are good and you can tell like really early. So yeah, whatever. So I don't like to talk about it in front of my older son to like basically shred his confidence. But
is your older son a listener to 32 Fans? Let's hope not.
Now he's not. And so, but the thing I was saying about Keeve and his kids is like, I think I remember from that podcast of like, let's remember our top five like academic exploits, like Chester.
Sports,
hit like a
athletic
long,
exploits. Athletic, no, academic would have been top
I said,
one
no,
at most.
My bad. I meant athletic.
Scholastic Chester, academic
Chester's was
exploits,
like hitting like an NBA 3 in like Target Center or something like that. Yeah. And Keeve.
No, it was probably my Valley Tour performance.
And
video.
I think Keeve, you got a shot on goal at age 12 at Morris in like
two
the semifinal
goals
game.
Scored
and
two
your
goals
father
against,
missed
I think,
it,
Harold Rosengarten's team in a Color War hockey game.
So listen, I don't know who you marry. I mean, did you marry Jackie Joyner Kersee?
Well, Mara was the captain of her high school basketball team. She can really play ball.
All right, there it is. So that's good. It's important. As you know, when you go to camp, all that matters is sports. So,
yeah,
you know.
It's, how good, it's really like, well, not if you go to like Nesher or one of those camps, but if you go to like a fun camp, then it's, this is inside modern Orthodox Jewish baseball only, and Chester doesn't even know we're talking about because he lived in Minnesota. Right, it's like you are.
I didn't go to the same camps as you guys at all.
You are, Jared. You are proportionally as to the point where you
right
how good you are at sports. In school, I got away with because I was like so knowledgeable about sports.
Right,
that they would let
me
make the teams and like that sort of thing, and they would trust me. They would ask me like rules in the middle of a game. In camp, it didn't work.
Elite sports fan in school works. Elite sports fan in camp.
Right,
because
nobody's following sports in the summer. Like they would like want to read my newspaper, see what the Mets were doing, but it didn't work for a cool point.
All right, there you go.
All right, Jared, thanks so much for joining us. Keeve.
No problem. Thanks a lot, guys.
We'll talk to you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Feel the wind in your face. It's more than a contest. It's more than a race. Always did your best, 'cause inside you knew. In one shining moment, you reach for the sky. In one shining moment, you knew. In one shining moment, you're willing to try. In one shining moment.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.